Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all. This is Robert Rogers. I am the founder of Parkinson's Recovery, and now 2004, we are certainly over one decade old. Parkinson's Recovery is dedicated to provide information, support, and resources to individuals who are looking for ways to reverse symptoms associated with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. The audience is global, and individuals connect in who both have Parkinson's symptoms and, of course, their family members. So may I welcome each and every one of you who are listening to our fascinating, I might say, interview today about macrobiotics. I've been airing the show now for a decade, and I must tell everyone, I have been vigilantly searching for someone who's an expert on macrobiotics, and finally I landed on the perfect individual. Warren Kramer is from macrobioticsnewengland.com, and it's a pleasure and an honor for me to welcome you, Warren, to Parkinson's Recovery Radio today.
Thanks, Robert. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Tell everybody about yourself.
Well, I've been involved in the holistic health field in macrobiotics. This is actually my 30th year. As you mentioned, I think you did, I live in Boston, Massachusetts. The bulk of my work is my travel while I see people home here in Boston for health counseling and teaching classes here. I do teach in about 12 cities in the U.S. Actually, I do go to Canada a little bit. I go to each of those cities usually three times a year, where I basically do three things. I see individual people for counseling, health counseling. I teach cooking classes, holistic health cooking classes, macrobiotic cooking classes, I call them. And I lecture on various health topics. And that's in a nutshell what I do. Yeah.
I believe, Warren, that you were actually out in Portland, Oregon, in my neck of the woods just last week, and you're going to Atlanta, Georgia. Is it tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm going. I just was in Portland. I'm going to Atlanta tomorrow. In Portland, I gave three lectures. I gave a cooking class, and I saw people individually one-on-one for, you know, specific health counseling guidance. And tomorrow I'm going to Atlanta. I'm going to do a couple lectures, actually just lectures, not cooking classes. We're going to do some lectures and then health counseling in Dunwoody, Georgia. That's right.
And if all of a sudden your interest is piqued, even before we begin to discuss macrobiotics, Warren's website is the following, macrobioticsnewengland.com. So first of all, the word macrobiotics, MacroBiotics, and then the words New England, NEWENENGLAND.COM. The subject of the interview today is macrobiotics. Warren, where does macrobiotics come from?
You know, the first person to use that word is the father of modern Western medicine, Hippocrates. He actually used the word macrobios, which means macro is big or large, and bios life, basically to describe a way of living and eating in connection to the environment and looking at the same time, looking at all aspects that go into creating health, and of course, one of which is food, of course, you know, so diet and lifestyle factors. And it's basically an orderly approach to diet and lifestyle. That's what really macrobiotics is. And, you know, the oath that doctors, I don't know if they still take, but used to take, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food, is really what macrobiotics is about. It's, you know, it's looking at those factors that go into creating the health, the quality of our life, and you know, and how we live in relation to our surroundings. So, you know, on that note, I mean, he's probably the first one to use the word. And then there's a gentleman, last name is Kushi, K-U-S-H-I. His first name was Michio, M-I-C-H-I-O. Him and his wife, Aveline, they're really the pioneers of the natural foods movement. They introduced macrobiotics back in the 60s, and they really got the ball rolling as far as people understanding and knowing about holistic health and food. So these are really the pioneers. Yeah.
Many listeners think of medicines as what you get when you go to a doctor. They're prescribed. You go to a pharmacist, you get medicines, and then you take pills. What I guess you're saying, it sounds like, is medicine can actually be food.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Robert, the first medicines, so to speak, were plants. I mean, they're plants, they're herbs, things naturally found in the environment. No question, more and more people are moving in that direction in terms of looking at how to treat various health issues in a more natural way. And you know, that's what we're talking about, you know, how to use food to deal with certain health issues and then just, you know, in general to create better health and vitality, as well as looking at lifestyle factors, which I know a lot of people really don't look at enough, you know, specifically lifestyle factors that do transform health. And some of them are the most, you know, the most simple things, but we just don't even think of the of them and the power of them. Yeah.
What is the difference between what a dietitian would suggest and what you would suggest?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and the difference is very simple. That, you know, there's two ways of looking at food. One way, of course, you can analyze it and look at it nutritionally. You know, what's the nutrition in it? But another way, and it's probably even more significant, is what's the energetic quality of something, the energy of something. And for a lot of people, I know that sounds something strange and out there. What does it mean by the energy of something? So this is, sounds like some kind of strange woo-woo thing, you know, the energy of food. But for instance, to give you an example, like if you took a rice cake, you know, a simple rice cake, you know, you would think, okay, there's not much in the way of calories there, which is true. There's not much fat. There's not much protein. It's not much. It's almost like it's air. But the quality of it energetically, that is actually not good for a lot of health conditions, is the fact that it's dry. So it's dry. And so dry is like an energetic quality to it. And then how does that affect the body? So you can't always look at food and think of it just nutritionally. You have to look at it energetically. And another example would be you think about, okay, drinking water. Sure. Natural thing, drink your water. But what if that water now is iced instead of it being, let's say, lightly cool or room temperature? Now that water has a different effect on the body because it's ice cold. That's an energetic quality. So, you know, we can look at food both nutritionally and energetically. Is it warming? Is it cooling? Does it have a expanding effect on the body? Does it have a contracting effect on the body? Because literally our organs, they expand and they contract, you know. And so we look at food both ways. So I look at it as a macrobiotic counselor, both nutritionally and I look at it energetically. And I think that's very different. Most people don't look at food like that, you know. And so that's something outside the box. But I can tell you this, that so many people, when they're able to look at it in a different light, they notice big changes in how they feel because of that one aspect. Yep.
People who live in the United States go to a restaurant, order water, and there's typically lots of ice cubes. People who live in Europe go to a restaurant, they have to ask for water, and there is no ice. All right, so which is better, to go to Europe to a restaurant or a restaurant in the United States?
probably in Europe, because first of all, the portions are smaller anyway. So there's something to be said about that too. Let alone, no, you're not going to get ice, but you have portion control there because they don't have as much. So, you know, there's something to be said about that too. And that's another factor with regard to food, and that's quantity, you know, changes the quality of the food. How much, you know, versus the quality of it. You know, overeating any food turns it into bad food. So, you know, there's obviously different factors when we talk about food and nutrition. It's not just whether something has omega fatty acids or it's high in a certain vitamin. You have to look at, you know, different aspects about it and what it does. Absolutely. Yeah.
Why is macrobiotics effective in healing?
There's a number of reasons. But I'd have to say what first comes to my mind is that with macrobiotics, you know, when people are on the path of trying to, you know, recover their health and, you know, return something back to balance, one of the things I've noticed over the years is that as people simply take away or avoid the foods that are making trouble for them, they feel better. They simply feel better without even adding, let's say, the good stuff in, which, of course, is important. But I can give you an example, Robert. You know, simply this one thing, you take sugar, like simple sugars, junk food out of someone's diet, everyone feels better. Everyone. I've never in my career, over the last 30 years, have had someone tell me, oh, I stopped sugar, I stopped the chocolate, I stopped junk food, and I feel worse, or I don't notice any change. Never. So one of the things is simply taking away what may be making trouble for someone. And so, you know, in macrobiotics, what we look at the nature of a health problem. What's the nature of a specific condition? You know, is it, okay, is it Parkinson's, or is it maybe problems with the prostate, or is it problems with, you know, maybe my lungs, or what's the issue that's going on? And then what is the food or foods that are like the worst things for those organs that are making trouble? And so just taking that out of the picture, naturally people feel better and notice a difference. I've seen this for many, many years now. The other thing is why it's so effective is that, and kind of goes along with what I just said, is that we look at the nature of a certain problem. You know, I don't lump all, let's say, for instance, as an example, cancers together. You know, cancer as a cancer, it's all lumped together. I don't look at it like that. I look at it the type of the organ, the nature of that organ, and what foods especially make trouble with that organ or part of the body. And then how do we use foods to support or to nourish those organs like that. Other things, of course, in macrobiotics is, of course, in macrobiotic cooking, the balance that we create in cooking. Macrobiotic cooking is really how do you create good, balanced natural foods cooking day to day. And I think also in that regard, it really supports health. And, of course, another one is simply that we normally recommend using as much organic as possible. And I think that's, when you talk about the quality of food like that, that makes an enormous difference for people. So, you know, those are just some things, I think.
We've talked a little bit about food. How do lifestyle factors play a role in healing?
I look at it like this. It's very simple. Lifestyle factors, you know, the way that we live our life influences the benefit of food or not. In other words, there's two aspects really in macrobiotic practice. One, you have the food, and you have your way that you live your life, your eating habits, your lifestyle. So, for example, most basic one that anybody can improve their health on, simply this. Number one, when someone eats, sit down. Don't stand up. That's the start of creating health. Look around and see how many people are actually eating standing up, eating and walking, for that matter, eating and multitasking, doing other things. But the start of creating health and the start of even good digestion is simply sitting and eating. The second part to that makes an enormous difference is simply eating at regular times every day. How many people have their meals all over the place? You know, one day maybe lunch is at 12, then it's 2, then there's no lunch, then lunch is back down to 12 again, dinner's at 6, then it's 9, then it's 8, then it's 10. When our meals are so irregular, that affects all our body functions. So, you know, our bowels, our urination, our hormones, for women, menstruation, our sleep, are all regulated. They're a cycle. And so when our meals are regular, that gives us basically an orderly cycle in our life that helps to regulate our body functions. So, you know, we're not separate as a human being. We're not separate from the environment. Basically, to create health, it's how do you align with nature's cycles? How do you create regularity and order? And so that's why I said, you know, macrobiotics is an orderly approach to diet and lifestyle. We live in a society right now where it's pretty chaotic for a lot of people. And, you know, for me in my own life, I just try to create as much regularity as possible in terms of my meal times. That's why I try to keep them consistent. And you know, people notice when they do that, amazing difference. Even if people didn't change their diet, just eating a meal the same time every day, consistent, life-changing. And I mean it. I'm not exaggerating. It's very powerful for people. You know, it's like Robert. Can you imagine? You take a 4-year-old and you tell your 4-year-old, "Okay, today your lunch is at 12, but tomorrow there's no lunch. Then we're gonna have lunch at 2 tomorrow. Then it goes back to 12." You got to be kidding me, right? Be terrible. But
that would
you know,
be abuse, wouldn't it?
Well, it would be. But if you think, okay, now that we're older, we're adults, we can get away with that. The truth is, we can't. We cannot. There are things that really we need to be consistent with our whole life, and these are things that you are really provable. You just see the proof is in, no pun intended, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. You see it, people feel dramatically different. And, I mean, I can go on and on about this one point. It also, when people eat later, like 2 o'clock for lunch instead of 12, it what leads to overeating because people's blood sugar plummeted so much already. So eating earlier makes people more relaxed and helps to stabilize blood sugar. There's many things, simple things that people can do that change their health. Also, lifestyle. It's just not eating late at night. I'm asked all the time, what do I think about fasting? Almost every week, what do I think about fasting for health? And I tell people, okay, try this fast. Eat breakfast, early, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at least, or earlier. Don't have anything till lunch. Have your lunch, 12 to 1. Don't have anything till dinner, 6 to 7. And then don't eat anything after dinner until the next morning. Do that for a month, and you let me know if you still want to fast. I haven't had anyone else ask me after that about fasting. That's a fast. But the reason why a lot of people struggle with that is because people's blood sugar is not stable. So you have people that are almost like eating all day long, constant snacking, instead of really having good regular meals and, maybe a little mid-afternoon pick-me-up. But that's also profound, is getting away from late-night eating and how that helps to strengthen the intestines, digestion. So those are some examples of lifestyle.
You're listening to Parkinson's Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Robert Rogers, founder of Parkinson's Recovery in 2004. My guest today is Warren Kramer from macrobioticsnewengland.com. Let's now focus a bit on symptoms associated with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. So what might be the most important foods that a person with Parkinson's symptoms should avoid?
Well, it's like this, Robert. I break down Parkinson's. There's really, for me, two types. There's one where you have these large or very quick movements, and you have ones that are slow or less active motion. So the ones that are large or very quick movements, so to speak, I basically, from my perspective in terms of energetics, that's more from excessive amounts of animal food taken in. So plenty of meat and eggs, poultry, other animal products, too many baked flour products, baked goods. And then the other one, the opposite, the slow or less active motion, too much sugar, other sweets, refined grains like white flour products, tropical fruits, bananas, pineapple, etc. Too much fruit and fruit juice in general, things like stimulants, spices. So we categorize these things like they're both extremes. And, in macrobiotics, we talk about this kind of, so to speak, yin and yang. And put very simply, yang, or Y-A-N-G, means contracted, so contracting. And that's what contributes more to the large or very quick movement. So that's the animal food, the eggs, the cheese, the poultry, like that. The yin, Y-I-N, is more of those expansive things that have an expanding, loosening effect. And that's the slow or less active motion. So that would be, of course, the sugar, tropical fruits, white flour products, and too much juice in general. Even in that, I would put in coffee, which in a way is extremes of both because it's roasted and it's tropical. So those extremes are actually the most important things to try to, get out of the diet. They really do affect people in that way. When I'm working with Parkinson's, what I'm really trying to do is strengthen the following organs. These are the organs I feel need the most support. The organs that basically related to blood sugar, so the spleen, pancreas, and stomach, keeping blood sugar stable. Number two, the lungs and the colon. You know, those are paired organs in Chinese medicine, in my background. And then three, the kidneys and bladder. So again, spleen, pancreas, stomach related to blood sugar, the lungs and the large intestine, what's also called the colon, and then the kidneys and bladder. So a very big part of it is actually how do you strengthen the intestines? Very important. And, you know, what's interesting is that the intestines very much are related to dementia and what's going on with the brain. So when you help the intestines, you actually help the brain very, very significantly. And, you know, you may be aware of this too, Robert. There's been so much out now. They're talking about the microbiome of the intestines related to the brain and our function. I've been seeing this more and more in conventional, you know, Western literature. And, you know, this is something that I've been studying and being aware of for years, gut health and brain health. So those foods are the most important to avoid those extremes. And when I say sugar, of course, I mean alcohol. That's a given, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
One of the symptoms that is truly troublesome for many people would be tremors that
yes.
are just excessive. And so if there is one step that you would recommend people could take who have excessive tremors, I mean, they can't do a lot of things, but they can do
yes.
one kind of a thing, what would you recommend?
You know, I would say make the remedy. There's a home remedy that's as easy as can be, and I'll describe it. This is what I recommend for people I've worked with, and it's wonderful. So the first ingredient is it's called umeboshi. I'm going to spell it. It's U-M-E-B-O-S-H-I, umeboshi. They call it a plum. It's actually a pickled apricot, but umeboshi plum. It can be ordered online. There's plenty of natural foods mail order companies. Some natural food stores will have it, umeboshi plum. The second ingredient is a good quality soy sauce or tamari. So for people that are avoiding wheat or gluten, they would use tamari soy sauce, a good brand. You can do like Eden is fine, or Mitoku, M-I-T-O-K-U. And then the third ingredient, Robert, is what's called kudzu or kuzu, K-U-Z-U, which is a root starch. And again, natural foods mail order company can be it can be ordered from. There's one that I like. I recommend a lot. It's called Health Goods, healthgoods.com. They have all these ingredients. You can order it from them. So very simply, what you do is you take a cup of water, so 1 cup of cold water. You take a teaspoon of that kuzu powder. It looks like chalk. You know, kuzu may sound familiar, Robert. It grows prolifically down south. It's a big headache down there, this big vine.
Oh, that's
root.
Right, it is, yeah.
Right? Medicinal stuff comes from the mountain grown, so you're not going to exactly get the stuff growing down in Atlanta. But anyway, you buy this kuzu powder, looks like chalk. You dilute a heaping teaspoon of that in that cold water, and then very simply on a stove, you just start to bring it to a boil. You know, you stir it the whole time. And then you add, while you're cooking that, add about a half of one of those umeboshi plums chopped up. And you just bring it to a boil. It takes, I don't know, 4 minutes. It'll come to a boil. And then you add a few drops of your tamari soy sauce, literally a few drops, maybe a quarter of a teaspoon. And then you drink it hot. It's a nice, warm, hot drink. What it does is it actually strengthens the intestines and the lower part of the body, which also relate to the arms and usually helps with the tremors. It kind of settles this energy down in the body. It's fabulous. Normally, I'd recommend that daily, good 2 to 3 weeks in a row. And then after that, maybe every other day for another 2 or 3 weeks. But that, I'd have to say, if you're asking me one thing that I would start with, I would start with that, you know. If you'd give me a number two, can I have a number two, a simple one?
Oh, please. Everybody is thinking, yes, oh, well, this is great. So what's
so
number two?
Take some ginger root, fresh ginger root, And what you do is you grade it, so it's like pulp. You know, you got to grade it. So, you know, it's funny. I recommend a little better grater than what people are used to. These old potato graters, you can get these nice round like ceramic grater. Spend a couple bucks more and you get yourself a nice grater, so you don't peel your skin off. So you grate some ginger, and then what you do is you take that pulp, and you squeeze the juice into a pot of water, you know, something like a nice small soup pot, and squeeze the juice from the ginger in there, not the pulp, just the juice. I sometimes squeeze it through cheesecloth. And then what you do, and this is nice if you can have someone help you with this one, you dip a towel in that, like a small hand towel. You dip it in there, wring it out, and then you rub down the spine and even the body itself. What it does, it helps circulation tremendously, and it helps create more flexibility and movement in the body, but especially down that spine, the whole body and the spine. And what I recommend doing after that, you take some of that ginger water, put it in a little foot bath, and you soak your feet in that warm ginger water. And that helps with this whole circulation, helps create more flexibility in the body. Very powerful. Ume shokuzu and the hot ginger towel rub down the spine would be very nice. Yep. Very helpful.
What wonderful yeah. suggestions. So for the first suggestion, some people may be thinking, well, can I make a really big batch and keep it in the fridge so that I don't have to make it every day? Or is it better to make it each and every day?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I could say it's good leftover. The problem is that the effects of that, both the kuzu drink absolutely needs to be fresh, yeah. I mean, that's if you're spending more than 5 minutes to make it, that's too long. It's a quick remedy to make, the kuzu drink. The ginger water, the problem is when you grate it and then you leave that over too long, the benefits of it are not there anymore, because ginger has a nice kind of good way, increased circulation and dispersing quality. So no, that one unfortunately couldn't leave left over. It would need to be fresh. So, you know, both of those really are best like that. And the kuzu drink for sure, fresh. You know what, I could just add this to this, Robert, what I've noticed some people I've worked with Parkinson's have had really good success with are acupuncture and what's called moxa, M-O-X-A, moxibustion, where you're putting heat is put over certain acupuncture points. A good acupuncturist will know moxa, but that's another area. It's easy. You know, you don't have to do that on yourself, obviously. You can get that done, but very helpful, you know, external treatment, yeah. Yeah.
Some listeners are going to want to follow up and say, wait a minute, I didn't quite get the spelling of umbashi and kuzu, so maybe we ought to spell those again for listeners who want to
sure.
actually make this concoction for a couple
Absolutely.
Of weeks. So could you very slowly spell umbashi for people?
Yeah, so it's called umaboshi, U-M as in Mary, E, B as in boy, O, S as in Sam, H, I, umaboshi. Umaboshi plum, P-L-U-M. And then the soy sauce, so tamari, T-A-M-A-R-I, tamari soy sauce. I don't recommend Kikkoman or Sanjay because often there's alcohol in those. So those are two brands I do not like. So Eden Foods or Mitoku, M-I-T-O-K-U, so soy sauce. Tamari. And then the kuzu, K, U, Z as in zebra, U. So the kuzu powder. Those are the three ingredients with a cup of water, and you're good to go. Yeah.
Now, in general, for people who experience the various symptoms of Parkinson's, what foods might they focus on to include in their diet?
Yeah. So I really like to get whole grain into people's diets. Now, whole grain doesn't mean special case cereal or whole grain goodness bagels like that, which there's a lot of misconception about that. When I'm talking whole grain, I mean brown rice, especially for Parkinson's, short grain or medium grain brown rice. I'm talking about the grain millet, M-I-L-L-E-T, that little yellow grain. I remember growing up, we used to give that to our parakeets for some bird food, you know. But it's actually good people food, and that's true. We used to give it to our pet parakeet. grains like if you're not gluten, have no issue with gluten, then I would recommend barley as well. So the three top grains would be brown rice, millet, and barley. If barley is an issue, the gluten's an issue in that, then I would leave that out. Grains like quinoa, certainly very nice. Grain like amaranth, very nice. So basically whole grains is really number one. That's a starting point, whole grain. But that's very different than a rice cake. It's very different than a cracker. It's very different than, you know, dry cereals. So, you know, when people see whole grain goodness and it's a box cereal, that's not whole grain. That's a flour product. So I think it's very important to make the distinction about that. You know, a lot of people are just eating flour. They're not eating the whole grain. And that's a good starting point. So after that, I would say people need to start including more cooked vegetables. So with Parkinson's, I do not recommend that much raw, as far as raw salads and raw vegetables. I don't. Very little, if any at all. I recommend more cooked vegetables. So, you know, there's a few styles, very easy styles of preparation. One, of course, is simply blanching. You know, you just put vegetables, bring water to a boil, the vegetable goes in 20 seconds, 30 seconds, take it out, especially things like leafy greens, like kale, collard greens, things like bok choy, nice dark leafy green vegetables. Of course, you know, broccoli, which I don't consider a leafy but more of a round vegetable. So there's blanching, there's steam. You know, you can steam those vegetables too, as well as sautéing. And I do recommend using a little bit of oil. I'm not opposed to using a little olive or sesame oil, as long as we're not, you know, overheating the oil. And then I'd like to describe a dish that I feel a vegetable dish is probably one of the most important ones when we're talking about Parkinson's, and that is, I'll spell it, it's actually called nishime. It's N as in Nancy, I-S-H-I-M-E, nishime. And what it is basically round and root vegetables, slow-cooked, like steam-cooked in just a little bit of water with a piece of kombu. Seaweed, it's called kelp, K-E-L-P, or kombu, K-O-M-B-U. So, you know, Robert, I made this the other day. I put in the bottom of a pot some squash. Like right now here in New England, we're getting beautiful butternut and buttercup squash and kabocha squash. So you have some nice chunks. And actually in Portland, Oregon, they were beautiful. So many of them were available now. Nice winter squash. So chunks of that, put in a little bit of sweet potato in that pot, some carrots. There's a nice root, very strengthening root called burdock, which I think some people may have heard of, burdock root. And so you put these chunks of vegetable in the pot. You just sprinkle a few pinches of sea salt over it in very, very little water in the bottom of the pot, and then you just simply bring it up to a boil and it steams, and you slow steam cook that. That vegetable dish could be at least 4 or 5 times a week ongoing for a while. Nishime. Fabulous. Fabulous. Yeah. And those are good starting vegetable dishes. And if I have to say a kind of a third area, I'd love to get people to start having more homemade miso soup. Miso soup. And I say homemade because the miso soup at a lot of restaurants is so incredibly salty. And homemade is very different. So people can go to a natural food store and buy miso in a jar. And a couple common brand names would be South River Miso. And another good brand is Mitoku, M-I-T-O-K-U. So they can get like brown rice miso or barley miso. And very simple. You're just actually making a broth and then seasoning it with a little bit of the miso paste after the vegetables have cooked in there. Really very nice. Those are three areas that I would start to, you know, incorporate: whole grains, more cooked vegetables, and then some miso soup would be a wonderful beginning. Yeah, very good.
So to clarify, you've made a number of fascinating suggestions of what people can do to get relief from symptoms. Do any of your suggestions require a prescription from a doctor?
Not at all. All made in the kitchen. Everything I've recommended is made in our own kitchen. Our kitchen is our best medicine cabinet. Yep.
Well,
yep.
So
right in that kitchen.
You've made so many fascinating suggestions for what kind of foods can help address symptoms associated with the diagnosis of Parkinson's. Are there any other ideas you want to suggest to listeners, something they might want to try for symptoms they experience?
Let's see. I wrote down some notes for myself. Well, exercise, I'll tell you this. Exercise, of course, and I'm sure you know, you're well aware of that, and it's been probably been on the show, but exercise is very important, that's for sure. Any kind of movement that could be done, outdoors, of course, is best, you know, due to the oxygen. And I have to say that the biggest thing is having some support and giving a little bit of a push to be consistent with this. I think that's one of the most important things to be successful, is that. But I have to emphasize that the extremes in the modern diet, both, you know, the animal foods and then the opposite, the sugar, the sweets, tropical fruits, sodas, et cetera, those extremes are really what end up making much more weakness and actually, I feel, really aggravate the, the symptoms, make it much worse. And, I mentioned the acupuncture already. I mean, basically, what's needed is really what I'm going to describe as good, nice, substantial natural foods cooking. Like when I say substantial, I don't mean a salad. A salad for me is not substantial. Salad is light, it's refreshing, it's cooling. But for me, that's not the type of food to get strongly nourished and settled, you know, and bring that energy deep inside. What's needed for Parkinson's. You know, you have to strengthen the intestines, as I said. You have to really make sure that the blood sugar is stable. Blood sugar gets stabilized from those round, sweet vegetables, as well as the use of millet, which is amazing for that, that little yellow grain, millet. And actually, to strengthen, when we didn't really talk about it, but I mentioned the kidneys and bladder earlier, Robert, and what's very important for the kidneys are beans. You know, beans look like a kidney. They actually literally look like a kidney, you know, kidney bean. And in traditional Chinese medicine, there's a lot of talk about the importance of bean dishes, well-prepared and seasoned nicely to strengthen the kidneys and our overall vitality. So I think, you know, that would help a lot as well. Yeah.
I've interviewed now up to 1,000 or more individuals who have Parkinson's symptoms, and a strong thought form for people is, I'll just figure this out myself. Would you also suggest that perhaps when it comes to good eating and exercise, maybe coaching might be beneficial?
Oh, yeah, there's no question. I mean, you know, first of all, what I've given is kind of like a little bit of an outline. Everyone's a little different, you know, Robert. Everyone's a little different. You know, I've been doing, this work for many years. I've seen thousands of people. I travel lots of cities. I'm doing much more work now on Skype with people or FaceTime for people that whose cities I don't go to. I have people that now, because of the modern technology of FaceTime or Skype, or I'm able to, you know, see people, you know, now on a weekly basis and check in, which I never could do before. I mean, normally with my work, I'd go to a city usually 3 times a year, you know, once every 4 months, and wouldn't really get a chance to see someone in between. I mean, maybe, of course, talk on the phone, but now, of course, with the technology of being able to see someone, it makes a very big difference. You know, one of the things I'm trained in, too, as a macrobiotic counselor, is visual diagnosis. So, you know, it's a whole other area, Robert, but the outside of the body is a reflection of the inside. So So, you know, the face, the hands, the feet, those all tell a lot about what's going on internally in the body. So, you know, that's why I like to be able to see someone at least, or at least someone mail me their picture when I do my work. Not just, okay, this is the nature of the problem, that's it. I have to really see what's going on too, because one size does not fit all, even with Parkinson's or any problem. Everyone's a little different. So yes, it's very important to have that, and ongoing support is a must. Absolutely, absolutely. Yep.
So to be absolutely clear, then, some listeners are listening to this discussion and they know in their heart, mind, and soul that they need to change their diet. They know that,
yeah.
But they have terrible difficulty in making those changes. It sounds like what you're saying is they can actually employ you to be an ongoing support and coach.
Absolutely. And I think it's very important for people to know that, you know, the health is a direction. So it's a direction that we take one day at a time with. You know, to make those changes overnight, everything is very overwhelming for a lot of people. But even just, you know, we start to add new things to our diet or add lifestyle things, there's a benefit there. A lot of people, I think, get overwhelmed thinking, oh, my goodness, I've got to do all these things at once. It's not the case. I mean, granted, of course, there definitely, when you have a serious illness and there's some urgency there, that's understandable. But for a lot of people, it's overwhelming trying to do all of it at once. And so that's why getting some coaching and taking small steps, you know, can be very helpful. You know, recently I just told someone, you know, on the phone who I'm working on Skype, who I'm working with once a week, I said, okay, between now and 7 days from now when we see you next, you know, when we check in next, let's try this one thing. I want you to try this one thing, you know, for next. In fact, what it was, Robert, was I said, okay, let's try to do this ginger body rub every day for the next week, you know, and holding people accountable for that. And, okay, I'm going to do that every day for 7 days, and let's go from there. Instead of saying, okay, let's do this for the next 4 months, let's try for 1 week, see if you can commit to that, doing the ginger, you know, body scrub to get that, you know, that circulation moving. And so, you know, it's direction. It's simply direction, moving in the direction of health and making better choices. Yeah.
How can listeners get in touch with you?
Well, probably the best way is emailing me. You know, it's very simple. It's my name. It's Warren Kramer, so W-A-R-R-E-N, Kramer, so no space at all. It's just K-R-A-M-E-R, M as in Mary, Warren Kramer, @... And then my last one, it's live, LIVE.com, Warren Kramer @ live or live.com. It's probably the best way to get me. And, you know, my travel schedule is also on my website, the cities that I go to, at least for the next couple months. But that's probably the best. Yeah.
Now, some listeners will go to your website and they'll see the listing of cities and they're thinking, oh, shoot, the city where I live is not listed. Is it possible that if they have other people, perhaps they form their own support group, that they might be able to approach you and get you to come out to provide some teaching and classes and support for them?
Oh, absolutely. I, you know, I'm open to pretty much going anywhere. I have, you know, the cities that I go to, you know, Atlanta and Chicago, Portland, Maine, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, et cetera. You know, I'm going to Vancouver. Jacksonville, Florida, there are people that are actually hosting me in their community. So I'm actually, it's really not, the events are not so much done at a hotel or whatever. They're, you know, often at people's homes or maybe a community center. And so these are individuals who have just wanted to have me there. And a lot of these, like, for instance, Atlanta tomorrow, I've been going there for 17 years, three times a year for the last 17 years. And it's a woman and her husband in Dunwoody, Georgia, that are hosting me there, and just really passionate about health and macrobiotics. And so certainly, yes, if someone wanted to host me for an event or some classes like that, absolutely can email me, and, you know, we can get on the phone and discuss the logistics and make it happen. Absolutely.
Warren Kramer's website address is www.macrobioticsnewengland.com, M-A-C-R-O-B-I-O-T-I-C-S. robertrogersinthefathersofrobertrogersenglaand.com. Some listeners are convinced that their diet needs to be adjusted if they want to see relief from their symptoms, but some people are avid people who love hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say
mm-hmm.
to them? They just can't give up their hamburgers or their steak and potatoes.
I mean, I tell people that, you know, if you really truly want to create better health, that it's important to find maybe a substitution. You know, just simply trying to, you know, to substitute. Like, so for instance, you know, maybe if someone's telling me they really like their animal food, I might say, okay, well, do you like fish? You know, do you something like meaty, like maybe salmon instead of a hamburger, like that. So trying to find some better substitution, you know, definitely helps. You know, Robert, the truth is this, you know, in order to create better health, one of the most important things is for someone's mind to be open. Look, if someone's mind's not open, nothing's going to change. That's the bottom line. It doesn't matter what the problem is. It could be Parkinson's, could be whatever health problem. The most important thing is someone has to have an open mind. If someone has an open mind, then, yes, anything's possible. If that's not there, then no. I mean, I certainly can't help that person. If someone's open to maybe trying to find substitutions, maybe a better quality animal protein, yes, that would help a lot. The thing that I try to mention to people, get people to see, is that our taste for food is biological, which means food craves food. Brown rice doesn't crave a hamburger. Brown rice craves broccoli. As people start to eat more natural foods, naturally, that food craves that food. Right? It's biological. Now, you might have a liking. You'd say, oh, I love hamburgers. It's a little different than what I'm talking about. If people can start to include brown rice, in other words, adding new foods, naturally those new foods will crave foods that are similar to that. It's awesome. It's really awesome because many people don't realize that. There's emotional eating, which is a little different. That's, okay, I'm sad, I'm depressed, I'm this, I'm that. I want to treat myself. I want to have my Burger King. I want to have my hamburger, whatever have you. That's different. I'm talking more on the biological level. I've seen this so many times over the years. As long as someone's mind is open, then, yes, their diet can change. When I started this many years ago, I'm 55, so I'm doing this for about 30 years now. When I started eating this way, I did not eat vegetables at all growing up, and I didn't like any of the food, but my mind was open. As I started to eat more of this food, that food craved more of that food. And so naturally, over time, I simply love the food. But that's not based on discipline. So for me, there's no discipline in eating good food. That's basically natural. It naturally comes as you create that attraction. The discipline in creating health is having good habits, sitting down to eat, chewing your food well, eating at regular times, not eating late at night, you know, creating some movement. That requires a little discipline. That's the discipline part. But in terms of eating good food, no. No, I don't think that's discipline. No, that's basically biological and attraction because food has a taste for food. Yeah. So that's my comment to that.
Your explanation fascinates me. About 30 years ago, I decided to give up eating lots of hamburgers and steaks and meat. I was living in Michigan at the time, and there were a lot of reports of awful toxins and bacterial
mm-hmm,
infections
mm-hmm.
that got into the meat. So we just decided we're not going to do this anymore. So I quit. And my experience
yeah.
was for about 2 or 3 weeks, it felt like I wasn't full. That I, you
mm-hmm.
know, I wasn't,
yeah.
my stomach really wasn't full, but I stuck with it, and
yeah.
all of a sudden that shifted, and it was only about, I guess, 6 weeks or 2 months after I stopped eating the meat that I could not eat meat anymore. It's like I
exactly.
couldn't even stomach eating a hamburger.
Exactly.
It sounds like what
exactly.
that's what I'm describing is exactly the process that you've just illustrated.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's just an adjustment period. And, you know, Robert, the other thing what's very normal is that when people stop eating those foods, people often crave those foods. I mean, I have clients who are dreaming about burgers or dreaming about pizzas as that's being discharged from the body. You know, it doesn't just come out through our bowels or urination or for women through menstruation. It comes out in different ways. So, in fact, it's very common in the beginning that people might crave exactly what the body's getting rid of, you know, detoxifying, so to speak. That's normal. It's a good thing. You know, and I tell people what you need to do is choose better quality, similar but different, you know. Try to create that richness or that heartiness in a little more satisfying way through natural foods. And then, you know, you're off and running, better direction, and, you know, shifting your health. Yeah, yeah.
Warren Kramer, you've offered so many fascinating suggestions to persons looking for ways to reverse their Parkinson's symptoms using natural methods. If you were to summarize what people need to take away from this rich discussion, what mm-hmm. would it be? What would you say to people?
Well, I would say, number one, create a very good structure in terms of eating habits and lifestyle. Really work on that. You know, the thing I've been emphasizing, regular meals at regular times, you know, not eating late at night, trying to get a really good structure in terms of how you live your life day to day for the balance part. Number two, I would say try to stay away from those extremes. And the extremes are animal foods, including dairy foods, et cetera, other than maybe including fish if you need the animal protein, some hopefully, you know, wild, not farmed fish, salmon, or preferably like white meat fish, you know, instead of shellfish also, which are more toxic. And then the extremes also, staying away from the sugars, et cetera. So avoiding the extremes. And then number three, start to include more whole grain, more cooked vegetable dishes, especially those leafy greens, things like broccoli, kale, collards, et cetera, more you know, soups, especially miso soup, as I mentioned, and protein source that's non-animal food-based, meaning beans, chickpeas and lentils, et cetera. I think if people can focus on those, I think whatever three areas I just gave, and, you know, that will be wonderful. I mean, if you can do the remedy, the umeshokuzu drink, that's a big bonus. That would be great. But I think that's a good starting point for people.
I invite each listener, then, to visit Warren Kramer's website, macrobioticsnewengland.com. Check out the various cities where he's making presentations over the coming months. And if you don't see the city listed, consider the possibility of approaching him to go out and actually visit your location so that you can, in fact, transform how you eat and also transform your lifestyle for yourself and all of your family members. Warren Kramer, thank you so much for taking this time to share with my listening audience these wonderful suggestions of how they can get relief from the symptoms associated with their diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. It's been a true treat for all of us.
Thanks, Robert. I really enjoyed being on the show. Thanks so much for asking me. I really appreciate it.
And that's what's happening on, you guessed it, if you've been listening to Parkinson's Recovery Radio for the last decade, on the shores of the Puget Sound that are absolutely gorgeous on this October day, where all the women are smart, all the men are handsome, and all the children are truly loved. Know that by virtue of the fact you have connected into this interview with Warren Kramer today, that you indeed are on the road to recovery. It's an honor and a privilege. I'm Robert Rogers, founder of Parkinson's Recovery. I look forward to connecting with you during our next radio program. Thank you so much for being with us today.